We had a packed Democratic presidential debate last night. There's an ongoing impeachment inquiry gathering steam and testimony while the White House refuses to cooperate. And two top U.S. officials are heading to Turkey in an attempt to halt military action against U.S. allied Kurds in northern Syria. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about the debate last night? Did any candidates stand out to you in a new way? Was there a topic you are glad you heard come up? Is there something you wish had come up but did not? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Are you watching or listening to the debates, or are you just going to wait it out since you can't vote for a while? 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Amanda Turkle is with us, Washington Bureau Chief at HuffPost. Amanda, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, great to be here.
Well, let's start with last night's debate, the latest among Democratic candidates. First one since Speaker Nancy Pelosi announced the opening of this impeachment inquiry. Did that come up at the debate at all, that whole impeachment thing?
It did. It was the first question asked, and that was actually pretty good for the Democratic candidates. So far in the other debates, we've seen a lot of division right off, arguing about things like Medicare for All and immigration. This time, the question of impeachment came up, and it was stark because it shows how far the party has come. Everyone was in agreement that it's right for the House to be looking into an impeachment inquiry and looking at whether it's right to impeach the president. And you just didn't have a lot of disagreement. The most interesting thing to me was that Elizabeth Warren said that. It was a subtle rebuke of Nancy Pelosi and House Democrats. She said, you know, we waited to do impeachment and look at what the president did in the meantime. He continued to break laws, you know, sort of you should have listened to me and done it earlier and it would have been better off. But for the most part, it was, you know, it was a show of unity amongst the candidates.
A dynamic coming into this debate was that Senator Warren has been catching up with former Vice President Joe Biden in the polls, pretty much neck and neck at this point. How did that play out at the debate?
Warren was definitely the target, which really showed that she is now the front runner or one of the front runners in a way that she hasn't been during the past debates. Warren has been in this interesting position where she's sort of been in the top three, but Bernie's been seen to be above her. So Bernie Sanders was taking a lot of the sort of fire, having to defend like progressive and liberal positions. Biden was obviously getting attacks. And Warren was sort of skating by. But last night, she was definitely into the target. She was having to defend quite a bit. And it just, again, showed that she is now, she's increasingly hot.
And then there were candidates in the middle who were trying to stake out a more moderate position than Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren. Who stood out in the field at the debate last night?
Both Amy Klobuchar, who has struggled to sort of get ahead of the field, and Pete Buttigieg, who has been raising tons and tons of money, but also has been sort of stuck in the middle. They both made a strong bid for the centrist lane, maybe people who want an alternative to Joe Biden. And you saw Buttigieg be particularly aggressive in calling out some of his more liberal colleagues, pressing them to be more specific on their plans, you know, just saying that they were unrealistic. And that was, you know, I think we're getting to the point in the race where candidates, it's getting harder and harder to qualify for the debates. I think there are a lot of Democrats who would like to see the field narrowed down a bit more. And so candidates are really now having to figure out a way to distinguish themselves to stay in the race.
Right. This was the merged debate. We'd seen at least some of the debates so far splitting the stage. Now all remaining qualifying candidates, it appears, will be on the stage together. That made for a really big debate. Was it hard to learn much about candidates, given that there were a bunch of them up there?
Well, it was 3 hours, so we had a lot of time to learn about them. But sure, there were candidates who got a bit lost. You know, Kamala Harris is someone who really distinguished herself in the first debate when she took on Joe Biden. Last night, she really didn't have much of a presence. Tom Steyer, the billionaire who entered the field pretty late, is basically, you know, is putting tons and tons of his own money into the campaign. This was his first debate. He popped up here and there, but was largely not a presence. So certainly there are some people who dominated more than others. And when you have 12 people, it's hard for everyone to have, equal time, obviously.
Talking to Amanda Turkle, Washington Bureau Chief at HuffPost, looking at some of the big stories in national politics. Amanda, news is coming out just today about fundraising for candidates. That can be a little wonky, insider politics-y, but is there anything you're watching in as numbers come out from time to time?
The big thing is, you've had the presidential candidates release a lot of money about how much they've raised, and they often spin those numbers in ways that make it seem like they've all raised tons and tons of money from small donors in every single state. But a lot of what was released yesterday were more granular details, including how much money they actually have in the bank. And what really stood out was that Joe Biden has far less in the bank than the other top tier candidates. He's raised a lot of money, but he's also spent a lot of money. And so right now he has about $9 million in the bank. So in other words, for every $1 that he's raised, he spent about $1.12. That is not great. Bernie Sanders has more than $33 million in the bank. Warren has more than $25 million. Pete Buttigieg has more than $23 million. You know, even Kamala Harris has more than $10 million. So that rate of spending is not really great for someone who's supposed to be the front runner. And I think it has some donors a little bit concerned about whether that's sustainable.
Well, as you mentioned, this debate comes in the midst of this impeachment inquiry. It was a big question at the debate. We're seeing a lot of testimony over the last few days. This week we had Fiona Hill, who was the president's former top advisor on Russia, George Kent, deputy assistant secretary in the Bureau of European and Eurasian Affairs, more to come, and more people, and the ousted ambassador to Ukraine herself testified last week. A lot of people showing up to testify when it wasn't clear that they necessarily would. What are we learning so far?
Basically, it has been hard, I think, for a lot of people who aren't in Washington and following this day-to-day to keep up with who's testifying and how they're testifying. But the basis is, the basic facts are that the testimony these people are providing are just proving what the whistleblower said. The whistleblower account has been backed up by all of these people coming in, that Rudy Giuliani played an outsized role, considering he is not a government official. You had a former White House advisor say that he was basically running a shadow foreign policy operation devoted solely to helping the president personally. You have this picture emerge of the fact that the operations of the government and U.S. foreign policy weren't operating in the neutral way that they're supposed to. And that really troubled a lot of career Foreign Service officials, including some who were either pushed out or resigned over it. And, basically, foreign policy, which is not supposed to be political, was made incredibly political to personally benefit the president.
And the White House has said it will not, on the whole, comply with subpoenas from the impeachment inquiry. The vice president has said the same. What's been the response to that?
Yeah, they've said they're not going to comply, but they also said they didn't want any administration officials or former administration officials to go before Congress and testify. And officials have said, too bad. If I am subpoenaed, I'm going to go and testify because I don't want to be breaking the law. I'd rather make Donald Trump mad than break the law and, face some sort of penalty. The Trump administration wants that Nancy Pelosi to hold a vote to open a formal impeachment inquiry. And some impeachment inquiries in the past have started that way. But there's nothing in the Constitution that says Nancy Pelosi has to do that. She has said we are in impeachment mode. Some courts seem to find that sufficient. And so, the Trump administration wants to do this to show that it's partisan, to just sort of divide Democrats a little bit more, confuse the public, the state of the impeachment inquiry. But so far, it seems that Democrats aren't going to do that. They're going to stay focused. And it shows that they don't really have to, because they are getting the testimony so far that they need from a lot of officials.
There's been video going around of Senator Lindsey Graham, then a member of the House during the Clinton impeachment, saying that not complying with subpoenas was an impeachable offense in and of itself. He was referring there to the Nixon impeachment. He was recently asked if he's changed his stance on that. Here's a listen.
What can you tell us about what your view is at this point of Democrats' impeachment probe? 20 years ago, you said that not complying with the subpoena was an impeachable offense.
Nothing's changed.
So he says nothing's changed, meaning apparently that not complying with subpoena was an impeachable offense. He's been in many ways a supporter of President Trump, though not on Syria, which we'll get to in just a few minutes. What do you make of the latest of what you're hearing from Senator Graham and others in the Senate?
Yeah, I thought that was an interesting comment, too. I mean, like you said, there have been some breaks between Lindsey Graham and the Trump White House in Syria. But for the most part, it seems like Graham is standing by him, although, you know, I think that what Graham said shows that there is frustration amongst Republicans privately, maybe more so than publicly, that they know that what Trump did doesn't look great. Not only, you know, what he was doing with the president of Ukraine, but also the system of how they were hiding the transcripts of Trump's calls that were politically sensitive in ways that you're not supposed to do it. That has made a lot of Republicans uncomfortable. They don't really want to be defending it. And so they need to make a calculation on whether they defend Trump or whether they break with him and suffer consequences, perhaps politically. But underneath the surface, there's a lot more, I think, uneasiness than you hear publicly.
Talking to HuffPost Washington Bureau Chief Amanda Turkle about some of the top news in Washington this week. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How do you think the impeachment inquiry is going? What do you want to see turned to next? And we'll turn to the latest in Turkey and northern Syria. A vote in the House today on that issue. Call 800-642-1234. Let us know what you think of that. 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with HuffPost Washington Bureau Chief Amanda Turkle, looking at some of the big stories in national politics. Before we go to the latest on congressional reaction on Turkey and Syria and the Kurds, Amanda, Hunter Biden, son of 2020 candidate and former Vice President Joe Biden, recently talked to ABC, said his roles at a Chinese company and Ukrainian company weren't, he said, illegal, but showed poor judgment and probably had to do something to do with his last name being Biden. You reported on that and some of the reactions from others on the Hunter Biden story. Can you tell us about it?
Sure. I mean, you know, I think that some Democrats are in a sort of a funny position. They know that Trump's claims about Hunter Biden and Joe Biden are completely baseless. They're nothing more than conspiracy theories. But there is the fact that Hunter Biden did cash in on the family name to get positions in China and Ukrainian companies, you know, on boards that he really wasn't qualified for beyond his name, probably. And he's admitted that. And, you know, I think that sort of cronyism and nepotism makes a lot of Democrats and Republicans uncomfortable. But it's not exclusive to the Bidens. And even if it's not illegal, it's unethical and maybe a little shady. But I found it interesting that and sort of how disingenuous a lot of the political attacks are. The people who have been criticizing the Bidens for this have been people like the Republican National Committee Chairwoman Rona Romney McDaniel, who's obviously the niece of Mitt Romney, whose grandfather was governor of Michigan. Her grandmother and mother ran for Senate. Her father ran for Attorney General of Michigan. You know, Rand Paul, senator, whose father was Congressman Ron Paul. You know, just people. And then, you know, Donald Trump Jr., who's obviously sort of a product of nepotism. So it's been funny that the lack of awareness by some of these people criticizing the Bidens, and just also shows how pervasive this system is in Washington in a way that, you know, you can sort of understand why a lot of people around the country find it a little bit disgusting.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Tom is with us in Port Wing. Tom, hi.
Hi. I don't find any of the accusations funny or to be dismissed, whether they are Republicans or Democrats. This is what's going on. This is the kind of thing where people leave government with millions of dollars after having salaries of $150,000. Not funny as far as I'm concerned. And I think you should be more serious about the accusations, not only against Joe Biden's son, but any of these politicians.
Tom, thanks for the call. And Tom, raising concerns about corruption, or at least the appearance of corruption, Amanda.
Right. I mean, my comments also weren't that that this sort of cronyism is funny, by the way. But, you know, I think a lot of people find this cronyism and nepotism that's pervasive in politics and business disgusting. And I think that there are, you know, candidates in the Democratic field, especially, who have put forward plans who, you know, to try to outlaw these sorts of positions and this sort of profiting from public service. And, you know, when people say that they're frustrated with Washington and that people are crooks, you know, this sort of thing is what, you know, is what people are often talking about. You know, Trump got a lot of attention and I think a lot of support for saying that he wanted to drain the swamp. And I think that message resonated with people. Obviously, Trump has not done that. He has put lobbyists in his administration. You know, he is now embroiled in the scandal where it seems like he is using government service to enrich himself and his friends. But, you know, that sort of message, I think people like.
Talking to Amanda Turkle from HuffPost about some of the top stories in national politics. Thanks, Tom, for the call. Big story in Washington, the president pulling troops out of northern Syria, apparently giving the green light, people are saying, to the government of Turkey for a military incursion into the area. We have Vice President Mike Pence, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo headed over to talk to President Erdogan of Turkey, trying to negotiate a ceasefire. A lot of criticism from Democrats and Republicans of the president's moves. Here's a little listen to President Trump defending his moves today, talking at a press conference with the president of Italy.
Our soldiers are not in harm's way, as they shouldn't be, as two countries fight over land. That has nothing to do with us. And the Kurds are much safer right now, but the Kurds know how to fight. And as I said, they're not angels. They're not angels. If you take a look, you have to go back and take a look. But they fought with us. We paid a lot of money for them to fight with us, and that's okay.
So the president talking more about the Kurds. Meanwhile, the House voted a pretty big bipartisan vote to condemn the moves here in the invasion. Amanda, what do you make of all of this?
It's pretty remarkable at a time when there's not a lot of bipartisanship in Washington that you could have 354 members of the House, Democrats and many Republicans, rebuke Trump on foreign policy. And those included people like House leadership, Steve Scalise, Kevin McCarthy, Liz Cheney. And then you had 60 Republicans who voted to stand by Trump. And these were people in very, very conservative districts. But, you know, Trump's decision of what he decided to do in Syria, I think, just took a lot of people by surprise, including in his own White House. He just seemed, you know, he discarded the advice of a lot of his advisors and just said he was going to go with his gut and didn't fully think through the consequences and how badly it could go so quickly.
And Lindsey Graham, again, Senator Lindsey Graham, often a Trump supporter. He, in a hearing in the Senate with a State Department appointee, said, I think this is the most screwed up decision I've seen in my whole time in Congress. And he wrote, he tweeted a lot today, I worry we will not have allies in the future against radical Islam. ISIS will reemerge and Iran's rise in Syria will become a nightmare for Israel. He went on, I fear this is a complete and utter national security disaster in the making. And I hope President Trump will adjust his thinking. Pretty strong criticism from a usual supporter of the president.
Right. I mean, I think a lot of people are concerned that we, you know, the Kurds have been assisting U.S. forces and expect some sort of protection and guarantee of assistance in return. And Trump seemed to have just all of a sudden, without warning, pulled out the rug from that agreement and broken that agreement. And I think it will make, you know, the concern is that it will make some other potential allies leery about partnering with the United States because, you know, what will happen? Will they abandon them and leave them, you know, to their adversaries in the future as well?
I want to bring on one caller going back to the debates where we started. Amanda, we've got Gary with us in Mosinee. Gary, hi.
Hello. I'm wondering how they set the time for the candidates to answer the question.
Yeah,
seems
Gary.
Like they were being, seems like they were being cut off just about every time they spoke, except for Yang and Steyer and Gabbert, you know, and Cory Booker. They could have went out for lunch before they were even called on.
Gary, thanks for the call. There have been a lot of bar graphs showing who got to talk how much, Amanda.
Yeah, I don't. I honestly don't know the formal rules of how they decide, but it is, you know, the candidates, it's not a coincidence that the front runner candidates get to go first. They stand in the center of the stage. They get to go first. They usually get more time as well. Candidates get a certain amount of time when a question goes to them. And then if they're mentioned, they get a certain amount of time to respond. You know, I think the moderators try to do a fairly good, they try to give candidates what they deem to be a fair amount of time, but certainly there are candidates who don't get as much because of their lower tier status or because they don't jump in and interrupt as much, or because the candidate, other candidates don't mention them and so they don't get to reply.
Gary, thanks for that call. In our last few moments, Amanda, we are basically dealing with multiple news fire hoses right now. Which one are you watching next?
I mean, the thing, honestly, I'm watching right now is that, you know, Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi, the Democratic leaders in Congress, just came from a meeting at the White House with Trump, where Trump apparently insulted Nancy Pelosi, calling her a third-rate politician to her face. Democrats are saying that it was basically a meltdown by Trump, and he was really shaken up by the Syria policy. So it'll be interesting to see how Trump lashes out at sort of what's going on in the coming days.
Amanda, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Been talking to Amanda Turkle from HuffPost in our weekly roundup of news in national politics, including last night's Democratic presidential candidate debate, the latest in the impeachment inquiry, and the situation in Turkey and Syria. As always, you can share your thoughts briefly, given the format on these issues. Go to Twitter and find us at Central Time WPR and let us know what you think.